Where's her hat? It was a new one I only just bought at the bay, you'd better get it. Meleagriba crossly thrust the child, so wet and dripping, in her mother's arms. The woman reeled back to think of her dress being spoiled by the water. Old Meleagriba moved on back to his little shelter. For some time he stood there glumly with water leaking down his clothes and oozing into his shoes and overflowing out onto the floor. But then, he thought, he didn't have any clothes to change into. It would be all right though, the clothes would soon dry on him. Wearily he grabbed the handles of the barrow, moved out with it and locked the door after him. He shivered because a cold wind had come blowing from the north, and everyone knows that a wind from the north is a cold wind indeed. Old Meleagriba shivered and went to work a bit harder in an attempt to generate some warmth and so dry out his clothes. Soon he began to perspire freely, but his clothes didn't seem to be drying much. He was slopping and squelching along, and it seemed to be an absolute eternity until at last the time came for him to go back to the depot. The other men were somewhat astonished at old Meleagriba's silence. "What's wrong with old Moli?" asked one. "He looks as if he'd lost a dollar and found a cent, not like him to be so quiet, is it? Wonder what happened? His old car was hard to start, and then just as he did start and was ready to drive off, he found that one of his rear tires was flat, so with a very loud curse he stopped the engine, got out, and went through the laborious task of changing his wheel. With that done he got into his car again and once more experienced great difficulty in getting the thing started. By the time he got home to his lonely room he was sick of the whole thing, sick of saving people, sick of work, sick of loneliness, sick of everything. Quickly he peeled off his clothes, mopped himself dry with an old towel, and climbed into bed without bothering to have anything more to eat. In the night he found that he was sweating profusely. The night seemed to be endless, he was having difficulty in breathing and his body seemed to be on fire. He lay there in the darkness breathing harshly and wondering whatever could be wrong with him, but thinking that in the morning he would go along to the drugstore and get some cough tablets or something to ease the trouble in his chest. Morning was long a coming, but at last the red rays of the sun shone in his small window to find him still awake with a red face and a burning temperature. He tried to get up but collapsed on the floor. How long he stayed there he did not know, but eventually he was awakened to movements. He opened his eyes and looked up and found two ambulance men just lifting him onto a stretcher. "Double pneumonia, that's what you've got, old man," said one of the ambulance men. "We're taking you to the general. You'll be all right," the other said. "Any relatives? Who do you want us to get in touch with?" Old Meleagriba closed his eyes in weariness and lapsed into a troubled sleep. He did not know when he was carried out to the ambulance. He did not know when the ambulance drove into the hospital emergency entrance, nor when he was carried up to a ward and put into a bed. Chapter 2. "Come on, now, come on, stick out your arm and no nonsense with you. Come on, get a move on." The voice was commanding, shrill, and insistent. Leonides Manuel Meleagriba stirred slightly and then came to a blurred awareness as his arm was roughly grasped and pulled from under the sheets. "I don't know what you are putting up such a resistance for," the voice said irritably. "I've got to get some blood out of you. Now come on, no nonsense." Old Meleagriba opened his eyes a bit wider and peered around him. Above him on his left-hand side a woman was standing scowling down at him. He turned his glance to a wire basket thing standing on the table by his bedside. The basket was something like the things milkmen carry around, he thought. But where the milkman had bottles of milk stashed away, this basket had a lot of test tubes with cotton on the top of them. "Well, you've returned to us, eh? Well, come on with you, you're wasting my time." With that the woman roughly pulled up his pajama sleeve and put something around his arm. It looked like a bit of black rubber to him. Then she tore open a little packet and took something out of it and vigorously scrubbed his skin. There was a sharp pain and he jumped, and the woman said, "Oh damn and blast it, why can't you have your veins up properly? Now I've gone and stuck it right through." She pulled out the needle, tightened up the tourniquet around his arm and then took another jab. Maligriba looked down bemusedly and saw a big tuber glass test tube attached to a needle going into his arm. As he watched, the tube filled up. Quickly, with the deftness of long practice, the woman detached that tube and put on another which also filled. Then, satisfied at last with the supply of blood, she yanked out the needle and slapped an elastoplast patch over the perforation. With a grunt she put the two tubes in her wire basket after carefully writing his name on them. The woman moved on to another bed and her snarling, whining voice rasped the other patient's nerves. Maligriba looked about him and saw that he was in a room with five other patients. Then his sight blurred and his breath became difficult and for a time again he knew nothing. The clattering noise disturbed him. There seemed to be the clatter of dishes and the rumble and squeak of a big trolley being pushed along. Slowly, painfully, he opened his eyes again and just outside the door of the ward right opposite his bed he saw a gleaming chromium contraption which seemed to be loaded with chromium-plated cabinets. As he looked a nurse came from somewhere and started handing out little trays on which were food, each tray labeled with the name of a patient. An orderly came over to him, looked down and said, "Well, how do you feel now?" Old Maligriba grunted in reply because he just felt too worn out to talk, and, as he vaguely thought to himself, surely any fool could see that he was feeling pretty sick. The orderly unhooked some things from the back of the bed and said, "Just put your left arm out straight, I'm going to take your blood pressure." He felt an increasing constriction around his upper arm, and then he saw the orderly with stethoscopes in his ears. In his right hand he had a rubber bulb which he was squeezing. Maligriba dozed off again and awakened once more as the pressure around his upper arm was released. "Okay," said the orderly, "Dr. Frobotum will be along soon. I believe he's just starting his rounds. See you." The orderly moved about, going from patient to patient. "Well, what's wrong with you, old fellow, what's wrong with your breakfast this morning, eh?" he asked one man. Maligriba saw that the man had a long pole thing beside him on which was suspended a bottle with tubes coming from it. He asked feebly, "What's that guy's having done?" "Oh, that's an IV drip," said the orderly. "He's having a saline solution put into him to buck up his ideas." The room faded again and Maligriba could hear his own rasping breath which seemed to be echoing in a vast distance. Once again he was disturbed. He felt a hand at his throat and then he realized that his pajama buttons were being unfastened. "What's wrong with this fellow?" asked a male voice, and Maligriba opened his eyes and looked up. He saw what was obviously a doctor with his white coat on and above his left breast he had the words "Dr. Frobotum" written in embroidery stitches. "Oh, doctor, this man was brought in and the paramedic said he had double pneumonia, so we are waiting for you to examine him." The doctor scowled and said, "Oh, so the paramedics are setting themselves up as diagnosticians now, eh? I'll look into that." He bent down and applied his stethoscope to Maligruba's chest. Then letting the earpiece dangle, he tapped hard with a forefinger and quickly listened into the sound. "I think he'll have to go for X-ray, his lungs seem to be pretty full of fluid. See to it, will you, nurse?" The doctor bent down over what was obviously Maligruba's chart and then wrote something, and went on to the next patient. Maligruba dozed. There was the sound of voices and Maligruba opened his eyes again and looked up. There was a nurse and an orderly bringing a wheeled stretcher to the side of his bed. Somewhat roughly he was pushed to one side of the bed and the edge of the stretcher was slid under him. Then with a quick flip like a man landing a big fish, he thought he was eased onto the stretcher and the orderly quickly shoved a sheet over him, and they went trundling away down a long corridor. "What happened to you, old fellow?" asked the orderly. "Oh, I'd know," said Maligruba. "I went into cold water yesterday and didn't get a chance to dry off after, so then I got too hot and then I got too cold, and I fell down or something because when I woke up I found I was in that ward. Gee, I do get a pain in my chest, isn't anyone going to do anything for me?" The orderly whistled through his teeth and then said, "Oh yes, for sure, we're going to do something for you all right and you'd better believe it, we're taking you to X-ray now, aren't we? What do you think we're doing it for if we're not going to help you, eh?" There was a clatter and a bump and the stretcher came to rest against a wall. "There you are," said the orderly, backing off. "They'll come and wheel you in when they're ready for you. It's been a busy day already. Looks to be one of those rush days. Dunno what I stay in this racket for." With that he turned and hurried off down the corridor with the glass sides. Old Maligruba just lay there for what seemed hours. All the time it was getting more and more painful to breathe. At last a door opened violently and a nurse came out pushing another stretcher. "It's back to the ward for you," she said to the woman on the stretcher. "I'll leave you here and someone will collect you when they've got time." With that she took the stretcher past old Maligruba and turned to him saying, "Well, you're the next, I suppose. What's wrong with you?"
"Can't breathe, that's what's wrong with me," said Maligruba.
The woman grabbed the stretcher and with what seemed to be unnecessary force swiveled it around, through the doorway, and into a dark, dark room. There was barely enough light to see your hand in front of your face, but Maligruba peering about could see that there were strange metal tubes and chromium pieces and wires going everywhere, and at one side of the room there was what seemed to be a cashier's desk in a cinema. The woman pushed him up against what appeared to be a table, but instead of being a straight table it was curved a bit.
"What's wrong with this one?" asked a voice, and a young girl came out from behind the glass cabinet thing.
"I've got his chart here. Suspect double pneumonia. Chest X-ray, back and front." Together the young girl and the nurse grabbed old Maligruba, pushed the stretcher tighter against the table and with a sliding swoosh he was pushed straight onto that chromium-plated table with a curving surface.
"Ever been X-rayed before?" asked the young girl.
"No, never. Dunno anything about it," said Maligruba.
"Okay, we'll soon get you fixed," said the girl.
"There you are, lie on your back, just do what you're told, that's all we want." She fiddled about altering the height of a big box which seemed to be suspended on chromium tubes. She pressed buttons and there was a little light, and onto his chest she projected what seemed to be an X. Then being satisfied with her adjustments she said, "Don't move now, you stay there and when I say breathe you breathe deeply and hold it. Understand?"
"Yes, I understand, you tell me when to hold it, then," said Maligruba.
The young girl turned and went away behind the cashier's desk thing. After a moment or two she yelled out, "All right, hold it," and there came a sort of hissing. Then the young girl said, "Oh okay, breathe." She came out to the side of the table and she seemed to be opening drawers or something. Maligruba could just see that she had a big metal box in her hands, bigger than his chest. She fiddled about with the metal box and then she took another one and she slipped it under the table on which he lay. She said, "Now, we've got to turn you over on your face." She grabbed him and turned him over, jiggling him about so that he was exactly in the right position. Once again there came the fiddling around with that black box. Once again there came the little light which projected the X on him. Then, satisfied with that, she walked away to the glass cubicle place and once again came the command to hold your breath.
"Okay, let it out."
It went on for some time. Maligruba lost count of the number of X-rays that were taken, but at last the woman came back to him and said, "Okay, I'll just push you outside and you'll have to stay there until we see if these films have come out all right. If not we'll fetch you in again. If they have you'll be pushed back to your ward." With that she opened the door and just pushed the stretcher out. Maligruba thought it was very much like locomotives shunting trucks, and in this hospital they seemed to have no more compunction or compassion for the patients. Everything seemed to be slap bang, slap bang. After what seemed to be a long, long time a small girl she looked to be about 14 years of age came along shuffling her feet and sniffling away as if she had a terrible head cold. Without a word to Maligruba she grabbed the end of his stretcher and pushed. The stretcher moved and with the sniffling girl as his mode of propulsion Maligruba traversed the corridor again, and eventually reached the ward whence he originally came. The girl gave the stretcher a final push and said, "There he's all yours." She walked off. The stretcher rolled along a bit and ended with a bump against the far wall. No one took any notice, but eventually the orderly came and pushed the stretcher to old Maligruba's bedside, saying, "Okay, it's all over.
The doctor will be along again in about an hour. Hope you last all right till then. Maligruber was slid along on the stretcher until once again he was in his own bed. The orderly pulled the sheet up to his chin and in a leisurely manner pulled the stretcher out of the ward. An orderly came rushing in and skidded to a stop by old Maligruber's bed. "You pull the kid out of the water yesterday?" he asked, in what was meant to be a whisper but which sounded all around the ward.
"Yes, guess I did," said Maligruber.
"Well, the mother is here, she demanded to see you, but we said you couldn't see her, you were too ill."
"She's a troublemaker." At that moment heavy footsteps were heard and a woman come into the ward with a policeman.
"You him there," said the woman angrily. "He stole my little girl's hat yesterday." The policeman moved forward and looked sternly at Maligruber saying, "This lady tells me that you snatched her child's hat yesterday and threw it in the water."
"Oh, what a lie," said the old man. "I pulled the child out of the water and everyone else was just hanging around watching her drown. The mother did nothing at all to help her. I didn't see any hat. What do you think I done with it? Eat it."
The policeman looked around and then turned back to the old man. "You saved the child from the water? You were the fellow I've been hearing about?"
"Yes, guess so," was the reply.
"Well, you didn't tell me about this," said the policeman turning to the woman. "You didn't tell me he'd pulled your kid out of the water. What sort of a mother are you to stand by and then make such accusations against the man who saved her?"
The woman stood there turning red and white with anger. Then she said, "Well, someone must have got the hat. The child hasn't got it and I haven't got it, so therefore he must have had it." The policeman thought for a moment and then said, "I want to go to the nurse's station, I want to phone the superintendent." With that he turned and went out to the nurse's station by the elevator bank. Soon after he could be heard talking, saying a lot of yes, sir and no, sir and okay, I'll do that, sir. Then he returned to the ward and said to the woman, "I'm told that if you persist in this nonsense I am to charge you with effecting a public mischief, so you'd better cancel your charge or you're going to come along with me, and the superintendent is feeling mighty cross with you, I can tell you." Without a word the woman turned and stalked out of the ward, followed a moment after by the policeman. Old Maligruber looked absolutely sickened by all the commotion, his breath rasped even more in his throat, and the orderly came to him, looked down at him, and then pressed the emergency button at the head of the bed. Soon the chief nursing sister of the floor came in to look at old Maligruber, then she hurried out. Then she could be heard telephoning to the doctor on duty. Old Maligruber dozed off, having various vivid dreams from which he was disturbed by someone unbuttoning his pajama jacket.
"Pull over the curtains, nurse, I want to have a look at his chest," said a male voice. The old man looked up and saw a different doctor who, seeing that the patient was awake, said, "You've got fluid on your lungs, fluid in your pleura. We're going to tap it to get some of the water off." Another doctor came in, this time a woman, and a nurse wheeled a tray on wheels up to the bed. The doctor said, "Now, can you sit up? We've got to get at your ribs." The old man tried but no, he was too weak. So they fixed him up by having a blanket beneath his feet and what looked like a rolled sheet going under him and tied to the head of the bed, so he was in a sitting position and not able to slip down. The woman doctor got busy with a hypodermic and kept injecting something around the left-hand side of Maligruber. She waited a few moments and then pricked him with a needle.
"No, he doesn't feel it, it's all ready," she said as she stepped back. A nurse was busy with a large glass jar which had a nozzle at the top and a nozzle at the bottom. She carefully fixed rubber tubing to the top and the bottom and put spring clips on them. Then as she held the thing up to the light Maligruber saw that it was full with water. When she was satisfied she hung the bottle to the side of the bed, just below the bottom of the mattress. Then she stood by with the end of the tube in her hands, the far end of the tube coming from the bottom of the bottle went to a bucket. The doctor was busy fiddling with something, he had his back to old Maligruber, and then satisfied with the results of what he had been doing he turned around and the old man nearly fainted with shock when he saw the immense needle or tube which the doctor was handling. "I am going to put this stretcher in between your ribs, and I am going to tap off the fluid in the pleura,
Then when we've done that we shall give you artificial pneumothorax. That will collapse your left lung, but we've got to get the fluid off first. It won't hurt much, he said. With that he approached Maligruber and slowly pushed the steel tube between his ribs. The sensation was awful. The old man felt as if his ribs were caving in. He felt that with every thrust his heart was going up into his mouth. The first place was unsuccessful, so the doctor tried another, and another, until in the end, in a thoroughly bad mood at his failure, he gave a quick jab and a yellow fluid gushed out and onto the floor. Quick that tube. And then he pushed the tube onto the end of the steel needle. This droger seems to be quite blunt, he remarked as he went on feeling around Maligruber's chest. The nurse knelt beside the bed and soon after Maligruber could hear water running. The woman doctor, seeing his astonishment, said, "Oh yes, we use this droger in between your ribs and we insert it into a pocket of fluid in the pleura, and then when we have struck fluid we release the two clips on that bottle you saw and the weight of the water distilled sterile water running out draws the fluid out of your lungs by suction. We'll have you better in no time," she said with an assurance that she by no means felt. The old man was getting paler and paler, although goodness knows, he had little enough color before. The doctor said, "Here, nurse, you hold this." Then he turned away to the table again and there was the clink of metal and glass, after which he came back to the patient and with one quick movement shoved the needle in what Maligruber was sure was his heart. He thought he was going to die on the spot. For a moment he experienced intense shock, and then a feeling of heat and a tingling, and he could feel his heart beating more strongly. A little color came back to his pinched cheeks. "Well, that made you feel better, eh?" asked the doctor, jovial again. "Do you think we should give him an IV?" said the woman doctor. "Yes, perhaps we should. Get me the things, nurse, we'll do it now," said the male doctor as he fiddled about with various tubes. The nurse bustled away and returned pushing what looked to be a long pole with a crook at the end. The other end had wheels on it. She wheeled it up to Maligruber's right side and then bent and lifted a bottle onto the hook at the top of the rod. She connected some rubber tubing and gave the end to the doctor who carefully inserted another needle in Maligruber's right arm. The nurse released the spring clip and Maligruber had the peculiar sensation of something running from the tube into his veins. "There," said the doctor, "we'll have you better in no time. Just keep quiet." The old man nodded his head, and then slipped off into another doze. The doctor looked down at him and said, "He doesn't look too good to me, we shall have to watch him." With that the two doctors moved out of the ward leaving a nurse to do the rest of the work. Much later, when the day began to come to a close, a nurse woke up the old man and said, "There, there, you're looking a lot better now, it's time you had a little something to eat, isn't it?" The old man nodded dumbly. He did not feel like food but the nurse insisted. She put a tray on the table beside his bed and said, "Come on, I'm going to feed you, no nonsense now, we've worked too hard on you to lose you now." And with that she began to spoon food into Maligruber's mouth, hardly giving the poor fellow time to swallow before she started in with another lot. At that moment the policeman entered the ward and pushed his way through the curtains to Maligruber's bed. "I'm keeping the press off you," he said. "Those hyenas have been here trying to storm the hospital. They want headlines about street cleaner save child and we've told them you are too ill to be seen. Do you want to see them?" The old man nodded as emphatically as he could, and then mumbled, "No. Bad cess to them, can't they let a fellow die in peace?" The policeman looked at him laughing, and said, "Oh, you've got plenty of life left in you yet, old fellow, you'll soon be out with that barrow of yours again sweeping up after all these people. But we'll keep the press away from you. We've threatened we'll take action against them if they come here as you are so ill." He turned and went out of the ward, and the nurse continued with her feeding until the old man thought the food would be coming out of his ears. About an hour later the doctor came back, looked at him, and then bent down to examine the bottle beneath the bed. "Ah," he said, "we seem to have got it all out from the pocket. Now we're going to pump in a little air and that will collapse the lung. You see, we put air into the pleura and that pushes the lung inwards so you can't breathe with this one, It's got to be rested a bit. I'm going to give you oxygen as well. He put his head out through the curtains and said, you fellows will all have to stop smoking. You can't smoke in here while we've got an oxygen tent going. There was a lot of angry talk from the other patients. One said, why should we have to give up our pleasure just for him? What's he done for us? Deliberately, the man lit a fresh cigarette. The doctor went out to the nurse's station and telephoned somewhere. Soon an orderly arrived and old Maligruber in his bed and with the IV attachment still in place was slowly pushed out of the ward and into a private room. There, said the doctor, now we can give you oxygen without any of those so-and-sos trying to cause a fire. You'll be all right. Soon the oxygen tent was put in place, and a tube was connected to the oxygen outlet in the wall of the room. Soon Maligruber felt the benefits of the oxygen, his breathing improved and he generally felt a lot better. We'll keep you on this all night, said the doctor, and tomorrow you should be a lot better. With that he left the room. Once again the old man slept, this time more comfortably. But later in the evening another doctor came in, examined him carefully, and then said, I'm going to pull this stretcher out now. We've properly dried out this particular spot. We'll have you x-rayed again in about an hour's time, and then we can decide what to do next. He turned and went out, but then came back saying, don't you have any relatives? Who do you want us to get in touch with? Maligruber said, no. Don't have anybody at all in the world. I'm on my own, but I hope my old barrow will be all right. The doctor laughed and said, oh yes, your barrow is all right. City cleaning have taken it back to what they call the depot. Your barrow is being looked after, now we've got to look after you. Have a sleep. Before he reached the door Maligruber was asleep, dreaming of irate mothers demanding new hats for their children, dreaming of feral press reporters swarming over his bed. He opened his eyes in some astonishment and found a night orderly was disconnecting him from the IV apparatus and getting ready to take him down to X-ray again. May I come in? I am a priest. The voice was melancholy in the extreme. Old Maligruber opened his eyes and gazed with some confusion at the figure standing before him, a very tall, exceptionally thin man dressed all in black except for his clerical collar above which his very prominent Adam's apple bobbed up and down as if trying to escape from such a scrawny throat. The face was pallid with sunken cheeks and a most prominent red nose. The priest looked down at Maligruber and then sat on a chair beside the bed. I am a priest and I am studying psychology here so that I may minister to the sick in the hospital. I was trained in the Maritimes. Maligruber frowned and, indeed, scowled, and then he said, oh, I was trained in Calgary on the city rubbish dump. The priest looked at him and said most earnestly, I am distressed beyond all measure to note that on your admittance form it was stated that you were of no known religion. Now I have come to bring God to you. The old man scowled more and more, and said, God? Why do I want to hear your pratings about God? What's God ever done for me? I was born an orphan, he said with a remarkable disinclination to sort out what could be and what could not be. My mother had nothing to do with me and I didn't know who my father was, it could have been one of 100 men I suppose. I was on my own for as long as I can remember. In the early days I was taught to pray and I prayed. Nothing ever came of it until in the end I got a job shifting garbage at the city dump. The priest looked down his nose and twiddled his fingers, and eventually he said, you are in a very perilous position with this illness which you have. Are you prepared to meet your maker? Maligruber looked straight at the man and replied, how do I know who's my maker? It could have been any one of 100 men, as I told you. You don't think God came down and fashioned me out of dough, do you? The priest looked shocked and scandalized and even more melancholy as he replied, you are scorning God, my brother. No good will come of this, you are scorning God. You should be prepared to meet your maker, to meet your God, for in a short time maybe you will have to go to face God and his judgment. Are you prepared? Maligruber replied truculently, do you really believe all that jive about another life? Of course I do, of course I do, said the priest. It's written in the Bible and everyone knows that you believe what's in the Bible. The old man replied, "Well, I don't